Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
So over the past few weeks on the programme, Graham Finlay from the School of Politics and International Relations at UCD has been profiling leaders across Europe. And today, it's the turn of Italy's Prime Minister, Giorgia Meloni. Welcome back to the studio, Graham. Thank you for being with us. Now, Giorgia Meloni is an intriguing character, to say the least, because she was a fringe figure up until quite recently, I think it's fair to say. I mean, the head of a very small Italian party. It had roots in Italy's post-war neo-fascist movement. And now look at her. She's one of the most successful politicians in Europe. She has the ear of Ursula von der Leyen on the one side, and across the Atlantic, best friends with Donald Trump.
No, you really see it when she went to Washington for her own one-on-one with Trump. The New York Times was heralding her trip as, you know, a chance to sort of save Europe. And everyone was speculating about what her motivations would be. Would she use her relationship with Trump, which is a very positive one? He really likes her. And she really identifies with the U.S. Republican sort of culture war movement. You know, would she use it to benefit Italy, or would she use it to sort of dampen down the tensions between the U.S. and the European Union? And it really was emblematic of a role she's increasingly playing on the world stage. But just a few years ago, when we were covering the 2022 election, we mentioned, you know, all the sort of remixed of her speeches, which became sort of popular dance moves, music, which initially was anti-Meloni, but she eventually really benefited from. And there was a debate about whether we were normalizing Giorgia Meloni. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's pretty normal now, but even in 2022, she'd gone, as you say, from her first election as a separate party, breaking with the conservative coalition, got 2%, second election, 4.4%, you know, minuscule, many more seats in the second time. And then in 2022, breaks through 26%, leading the conservative coalition, which is still in power. It's now the fourth longest government in the history of the Italian Republic. So she's really established herself astride Italy, whether my Italian friends like it or not, right? Astride Italy, her popularity is increasing, a kingmaker or queenmaker in Europe, and with this special international relationship with Donald Trump. It's a really remarkable position for her to be in.
But analysts ask all the time, you know, who is she? Because of her background, because of her politics. And then you have this contrast with the way she is now. She's behaving more like a mainstream centrist politician in many ways. So is it possible to answer that question?
It is. And in fact, these are questions which are actually posed to Meloni herself, right? And she even throws back at interviewers. There was an interview with Time magazine where she says, at the end of the interview, a long interview, you know, it's well, do I seem fascist to you, or something like that?
Yeah.
Right. And so she's very aware of the need to move beyond what was seen as a post-fascist or neo-fascist past, starting when she was 15, joining, you know, the Italian social movement, which really was the heirs to fascism, with a flame logo, a tricolor flame logo, which has persisted to Fratelli d'Italia, the Brothers of Italy, her current political party. You know, so she had a number of extreme views when she was young. She, even in the 2022 election, talked about a blockade to prevent boats from coming to Italy. But she is very skilled at making a change when her colleagues weren't able to. So she's in a coalition with the Lega, headed by Matteo Salvini. In 2022, the head of Forza, which was Berlusconi, who passed away soon after. And both of those figures were sort of were famously undisciplined, famously beholden or soft on Putin and Russia, whereas she was never monetarily or personally indebted to Putin and Russia. So she could turn very skillfully to oppose Russia after the invasion of Ukraine, mm-hmm. having praised it as a defender of Western cultural values before. And so she was also very careful to move from a Eurosceptic position to a constructive Euro-realist, as she calls it, a position, and was extremely successful in the European elections recently, where she was at the head of her party She came to dominate the European Conservatives and Reformists bloc in the European Parliament.
Which is why Ursula von der Leyen has made friends with her, right?
Yeah, and
she has to.
And raised them up to be the third largest grouping in the Parliament, outclassing Macron's Renew coalition, grouping, sorry. And von der Leyen, as a sort of insurance, immediately, you know, not sure that she would have the votes, immediately began cozying up to Giorgia Meloni. Uh-huh. Appeared with her in sort of counter-migration meetings with third countries, has, I think, arguably kept criticism of Meloni's domestic program dampened down and blunted some of that criticism, because at home she has pursued a very hard line.
This is the thing. You see, what we see on the international stage, the pragmatic politician who seems to be very centrist, contrasts with what is happening at home. Can you explain what they're seeing?
So she came up under a culture wars banner, and I think this is why she appeals to the American right so much. She's very beloved on the American right. But she, you know, she was anti-LGBT rights. She was extremely anti-migration. She was in favor of a much stronger, more presidential style system for Italy. And so she's promoted some constitutional amendments, which don't strengthen the president, but do strengthen the hand of the prime minister, including guaranteeing whoever is at the head of the winning coalition a majority in parliament. And those have been very, very slow. But she's been able to crack down on the press, both through quite heavy-handed control of the state broadcaster, through control of private broadcasters and newspapers by members of her coalition, through libel and defamation lawsuits, mm-hmm. which have extracted lots of cash out of and quieted some of her journalistic critics.
Right. Didn't she take somebody on who made a mockery of her height? Because she's very small.
Yeah, he described her as 4 feet tall or something like that. She's not 4 feet tall. She's just over 5 feet tall. He was forced to pay her 5,000 euro under a defamation lawsuit, which he saw as silencing of his more substantive criticism than her height.
Just can we get a bit more on her background? Because you mentioned that her politics started around the age of 15. She came from a working class background, didn't she?
Yeah, I mean, she has a very sort of interesting childhood, which seems to have formed her drive. I mean, she and her sister were in a relatively nice apartment playing with stuffed animals and blankets and candles, which are not a good mix for people who are listening. And it actually caused a terrible fire, which led to them having to move to a more working class suburb of Rome, where she grew up as the daughter of a single mother. She's a single mother herself. And, you know, where she developed this sort of very dramatic and sort of individual and not particularly favored sort of working class Roman way of speaking, way of a very direct approach to her speeches, her negotiations, she's very blunt, you know, and that persona was part of her marginalization before, but now is part of her appeal, mm-hmm. I think.
Because J.D. Vance referred to that one time when he was asked about her, saying that she has a way of saying things in a very direct fashion without alienating people. That's what he likes about her.
Yeah, and he actually saw some of that in the recent meeting with Zelensky about Ukraine and with all those European leaders. She, as opposed to sort of hemming and hawing, was able to both praise Donald Trump for his intervention, praise Zelensky and Ukraine for their heroic defense of their country, and to say that, you know, Europe would have to provide security guarantees, but not boots on the ground. And mm-hmm. so and to stress European unity at a time when, you know, Donald Trump and J.D. Vance could be reasonably expected to try and divide Europe, right? Or certainly to sort of put some pressure on Ukraine. So she's very good at maintaining a consistent line while talking relatively frankly with Donald Trump, because there's this sort of warm relationship.
And you mentioned there her saying to the Time magazine interviewer, you know, do you think that I am fascist? Does she then try to downplay the roots of the movement that brought her to power?
She has for years. And, you know, that it plays certainly better in Italy. I think there's, you know, domestically, that seems to be working. There was a very interesting moment where in Italy, if you get enough signatures, you can put a referendum on the ballot, for the local elections just in June. And one was for reducing the amount of time it takes to become a naturalized Italian citizen. in half from 10 years to 5. And Maloney was not in favor of that, right, for their anti-immigration stance. Mm-hmm. Others were about sort of better protection for jobs and labor. And I think as in economically, she's been a populist, but also she hasn't changed things much in Italy. So she was sort of neutral on those referendums. But what she mostly did was her coalition told people not to vote in those referendums, but to vote in the local elections. She didn't vote herself, as she was thinking about anyway. And they passed, but they didn't get enough participation to actually for her to care. So it was only 30%, and they needed over 50% of voters to actually participate in the referendum. I think that shows how she's bringing people on board for this sort of milder anti-immigration stance in the referendums, who are coming from her coalition partners, from the Five Star Movement, which is a populist movement, and even from sort of maybe progressive left people who are relatively critical of migration compared to maybe their fellow voters in that coalition. Internationally, she is representing herself as a member of the U.S. Republican Party, aligned with sort of other right populist movements who are invested in freedom in her speeches, but also critical of wokeism and unlimited immigration. Mm-hmm. So she tries to set herself sort of firmly in this international cultural right.
She's very useful to the EU in dealing with the Republicans because she is a Trump charmer.
She is. And I mean, it's a big burden. Again, on tariffs, she urged the European Union not, and this is in meetings with Republicans in the United States, Europe not to retaliate. But at the same time, she was critical of the Trump tariffs because they're going to hit Italy very, very hard, right? You know, we already know that Chianti is piling up in Italian warehouses. So she was able to have a relatively frank conversation, not break unity with the European Union, and yet try to take something away. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, she is very useful.
So last week when we were speaking about Emmanuel Macron, he's a politician in or around the same age, you know, young and has come from nowhere onto the international stage, just like Giorgia Meloni. But you were writing the political obituary for him. What's the future looking like for Giorgia Meloni?
Looking at the polls, she's more popular than in the election of 2022. So the Fratelli d'Italia are up around 29 or 30%. Her coalition partners are pretty much static. The opposing main party, the Democratic Party, has gone up a few points. But it looks like not only is this government going to run its term, but she would be well placed to get a second term. And unlike Macron, she has captured a lot of the regional councils. You know, not maybe some of the more left-leaning ones like Emilia-Romagna and Tuscany, but many of them are in Fratelli d'Italia hands. And so there's a big base out there. And that's because she's coming from an established party, which was in the center-right coalition, as opposed to Macron, who is the party. She does less well at mayoral level, but which is why often the leaders of the Democratic Party are mayors from the big cities. But, you know, Fratelli d'Italia has deep roots now in a lot of the regions, and so they're not going anywhere.
Right, so there could be longevity there, so we could be hearing about Giorgia Meloni for some time to come. Graham, thank you so much. Graham Finlay there. Coming up next, Professor Luke O'Neill will be here.